We turn our attention to Michael Nucitelli. He is a New York State licensed psychologist, certified forensic consultant, here to talk to us today about the Tucson shootings. Good morning to you, Michael. Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on today.
Yes, good morning to you, and good morning to the listeners. Any snow up your way?
We got maybe, I don't know, 3-4 inches, and we're expecting maybe a couple of more. But that's, like I say, that's a typical August day here in upstate New York. What did you get? Where you're downstate, right?
Yes, I'm in the Hudson Valley. I don't know, for your listeners, kind of close to where Vassar College is, and next to Poughkeepsie.
Right.
And we're looking at between 8, maybe up to 15. It's still
really
kind of snowing now. And I'm hoping it, tails off in a short while.
Yeah, that's one of those storms that sometimes they kind of skirt around us for some reason, and you get them. But yeah, usually that's us. So better you than me, as far as this one goes. Michael, we appreciate you coming on today to shed a little insight into I guess the psychology of what goes on in someone's mind when they, go into this. I guess we call it rage, when they snap. I'm not exactly sure what the medical term would be, but let's examine that if we could.
Okay.
What is it that could possibly trigger somebody to actually get a gun? Because there has to be a degree of premeditation involved here. Actually have to get a gun, plan out an event, go there and do what this gunman did. What leads up to that?
Well, what it comes down to, when you're dealing with Jared Lee, this young man, and I'm sure your listeners have seen the recent picture, the headshot with the smug smile that was taken, I believe, by a reporter. He's a 22-year-old young man, fits most of the traits of the profile of a rampage killer, but there's certain attributes that either haven't come out yet or he doesn't fit the profile. One of the traits of the rampage killer as it relates to the profile is typically there's a trigger. That could either be something significant that happens in a relationship, either a divorce, an unexpected breakup, unemployment, and this is where we get the term going postal,
right,
is if somebody is laid off or somebody's unexpectedly fired. But for this young man, we don't really have, or at least it hasn't been released, a trigger point, per se, that caused him to, go and do what he did. And then the second part, which you bring up an excellent point, is the fact that there is now coming out, is he planned and put serious premeditation into this heinous act.
Is there any way, and not that we need to be looking for a responsibility on anyone's end right now, because that's not where we need to be, but is there any way that anyone could have seen this coming? Are there clues that we can look for in people that should be red flags that say, wait a minute, you maybe need to be on medication, you maybe need to be in counseling, you maybe need to be under closer observation? Are there things we should be looking for?
Well, there was a lot of, as you say, red flags that were apparent, but those red flags don't necessitate somebody who's going to, if I may say, go postal or actually do what he did that was just incredibly horrible. I mean, the way I see it is that he should have been mandated to work with a psychiatrist, be assessed for medication, work with a psychologist. He even was told by the community college that he couldn't return unless he came back with an evaluation saying that he was functional enough to come back to school.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he didn't return. But, I mean, the only thing that I could see here with this case, and once again, this is pretty new and the information is still coming out, is that's where my recommendation would have been. But in terms of, red flags, I mean, he was an oddball, a bizarre young man. But it's very difficult to prevent what he did because it's just so amazing and awful about what happened.
How much did his environment impact his decision to do this, Michael? That is, how much did, say, his distaste for politics or, the people around him, the current financial situation, how much did all those things affect this, do you think?
Well, it all plays a role into his profile. Somebody who has is predetermined, or if somebody has a mental illness, and we don't know. I'm thinking that what the defense team is going to do, he's now got Judith Clark, one of the greatest public defenders in our country. Her forensic experts and her team, to me, and I can't guarantee it, but are going to go for an insanity defense. Mm-hmm. Is to try to prove that he suffers from a severe psychiatric illness and that he cannot be found guilty because of an insanity defense.
So then what happens if the insanity defense, if they successfully defend with that? Obviously, he's not coming back out onto the street. He'll be in a mental institution for the rest of his life, correct?
Well, the one thing is, and once again, this is up to the Attorney General, Eric Holder, is that he's going to have to decide if this is going to be a capital punishment case, number one. If that is decided, mm-hmm. prosecution can go for the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, I mean, most people would prefer not to, be executed.
Mm-hmm.
So, even if, let's say, Mr. Holder does not go for capital punishment, the state doesn't, he would end up being incarcerated for the rest of his life, but he would be segregated and be, would be in a forensic psychiatric correctional facility. But that being said, because he's not found guilty because of insanity, there is the potential down the road, it would be years, for him to be discharged and released.
We're talking to Michael Nucitelli. He's a New York State licensed psychologist, certified forensic consultant. One of the things that really stuck out to me in this case, Michael, typically when you see a gunman go on a rampage killing like this, typically it ends with the gunman turning the gun on himself. That didn't happen this time. So that makes this a little bit different of a case. Is there a reason why he didn't take his own life that you can think of? Or was it just that he didn't have the chance?
Well, you bring up a great point, and I hate to be an armchair psychologist, mm-hmm. But I do that with football as well. The way I see it is that there is a strong narcissistic quality about this kid. And you can see it in the headshot with that smug smile.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, he's got major psychological or psychiatric issues, but an element of that, and I'm only guessing, but it's my gut feeling, is that he feels a sense of entitlement, he feels a sense of power, and now that he's infamous, and I keep thinking of the headshot of the photograph, he feels a sense of importance.
Do you have any kind of sense for what the public is looking for in terms of punishment? Do you think people, for the most part, when they see a crime like this, are they thinking death penalty? Are they thinking this guy needs help? Are they feeling sympathetic at all towards the gunman? How do we feel about that? I know how I feel specifically, but that doesn't necessarily match with the rest of the country's thought.
Well, I mean, from what I understand is, going online, watching television, reading all the periodicals right now, and you have to remember, this only happened on the 8th, so mm-hmm. we're only going on 4 days. So for the country right now, their response is rage, they're devastated, and a lot of people can't understand how he could commit such a heinous act. I mean, for crying out loud, part of his onslaught, he murdered a 9-year-old.
Sure.
A 9-year-old.
Yep.
Well, I mean, not that it's acceptable to go after, the congresswoman, and God bless her, but to actually shoot and kill a 9-year-old, I mean, that speaks volumes about this man.
Mm-hmm. Well, this certainly is not good PR for gun owners or the NRA or the gun lobby or anything else. But I think also damaged, possibly maybe even worse, is the community of the mentally ill. Now, this really has to attach a stigma on anybody that's mentally ill and make us look at them, with a little bit of doubt and possibly fear. Do you think that this is going to cast an even worse light on a section of society that hasn't necessarily ever been looked at favorably in the first place?
Well, one of the segments that, and I've just, you know, I've been reading a lot about this case and also just criminology and what's going on in the justice system on a national standpoint, and a lot of states now, and they've been thinking about this for, you know, a couple of years, but now because of this case and what's occurred, they're really thinking about pushing it, and that is creating crime registries. Now, what most of us knows are sex offender registries for your convicted felons that are pedophiles or rapists or people that have done something that are long sexual deviants. But now what they're talking about is having, you know, registries for, you know, ex-convicts that are arsonists and a variety of other different notification methods. So this way, communities are allowed to know who's living next door. The downside is for that percentage of folk that are either coming out of penitentiary or they're actually rehabilitated, now the entire neighborhood is going to know what their criminal history is, and it makes it even twice as hard to, you know, to rejuvenate, to get back on their feet, and to move on. So me personally, I look at it as the lesser of two evils in that, you know, the community is made up of law-abiding citizens, and even though the convict felon suffers, I still have to vote for, you know, the right of the law-abiding citizen.
We're talking to Michael Nucitelli. He's a New York State licensed psychologist, certified forensic consultant. And you may be able to speak to this, Michael. You may not. But his lawyer, it certainly has been a high-profile lawyer, has defended some of the most, I guess, heinous cases that we've heard in the last 10, 15 years. Why would any lawyer want to take a case like this? Do you have any idea?
Well, why she would want to take that? I mean, she's appointed, and, you know, the federal government recognizes her as one of the most brilliant, established defense attorneys in our country. And her, you know, her philosophy, or let's say her her specialty, okay, is to be a defense attorney. Her goal and her training is in defending a client. Whereas you have a DA who's a prosecutor, they're trained and their energy is convicting somebody. So for Judith Clark, I mean you're correct. I mean she represented Susan Smith back in the mid 90s and she was the mom who, you know, let her two toddlers float into the lake with her car. We have Moussaoui. We have also, I'm sure your listeners remember, the Unabomber. She represented him as well. So, and she was successful in all of those cases, not that she got them to be discharged and found innocent, but they're all, you know, serving time and not going to, you know, not going to the death penalty.
All right, Michael, one more question. We'll let you go. Should we be concerned with copycat crimes when it comes to something like this? Is it possible that somebody sitting back with this, maybe the same mental capacity that this gunman had and, you know, thought, well, look at the publicity, look at the notoriety.
I think that always goes on. I mean, with this case or any nationally covered case, particularly a criminal case, there's always going to be people out there who are going to think about it and say, hey, boy, I could be just as famous as this guy. But it's not as if it's a across the board and there's a percentage out there that we have to be concerned about. For right now, what we have to worry about is that this young man committed an atrocious act, and it's, as a community, is learning what can we change from a policy standpoint to prevent these type of events from happening again.
All right. He is Michael Nucitelli. He is a New York State licensed psychologist, a certified forensic consultant, and also a pretty good shoveler of snow, which is going to come in handy. Come in handy for you today, Michael. Thank you for taking some time with us. Can I put you in my reference book and call on you from time to time?
Oh, of course. And on this case, this is going to go on for at least the next year and a half.
All right, Michael. Thank you so much. Appreciate your being with us today.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. Bye-bye.